From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week, a special In Memoriam issue of Register Radio. Jeanette DeMello looks at the legacy of the late Cardinal Francis George, along with commentators George Weigel and Rocco Palmo. Also, Jeanette and Register correspondent Ann Carey analyze the Vatican's final report on the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. Welcome again to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the Register. Thanks for joining us. Well, we're blessed to have two experts to discuss the legacy of Cardinal Francis George. Rocco Palmo is an American journalist who founded the popular blog Whispers in the Loggia. He served as analyst on the Catholic Church for the New York Times, the Associated Press, Washington Post, the BBC, NBC, NPR, and others. And we're also joined by George Weigel, Distinguished Senior Fellow of Washington's Ethics and Public Policy Center, where he holds the William E. Simon Chair in Catholic Studies. He is also Vatican Analyst for NBC News.
Well, George, it's great to have you on Register Radio, although it's a rather somber week for us to be talking. It's a week where we're remembering Cardinal George, who died last Friday. And the day after Cardinal George died, you wrote a remembrance at the National Review, which began, "Francis Eugene George was many things: a dedicated missionary priest, a first-rate intellectual, a shrewd observer of the public square, the first native of the Windy City to be named Archbishop Chicago, and a great reformer of the Archdiocese of Chicago." Those are many wonderful things, and we could spend the entire show talking about any one of those roles. So my first question is, what do you think he'll be remembered for most?
I think the Cardinal would want to be remembered as a Christian disciple, as a follower of the Lord Jesus, as a faithful priest, and as someone who tried to introduce others to friendship with Jesus Christ. He added to those qualities the things you just mentioned a moment ago. And it perhaps tells us something about him that a few days before he died, he was reading St. Thomas's Summa on the angel's vision of God. He wanted to know what he was getting in for.
Wow.
And that's really why beautiful. It's not been a somber week for me. I mean, we had been friends for almost 30 years. I had hoped to see him a few days after it turned out that he died. But There was no way I could wish him back or wish him to stay for another 3 days just so we could have a last hurrah. Because he was going to where he always wanted to be. He was going to meet the Lord, and I'm very glad that he's there right now.
Well, that's a beautiful story. I hadn't heard about that, what he was reading the days leading up to his death. Now, it's you wrote in your column about the fact that the Cardinal really suffered a lot in his life. This last bout with cancer was not, definitely not, his first experience of deep pain. How did suffering touch the life of this Cardinal?
He was quite extraordinary in his equanimity in the face of pain. He was a post-polio survivor. He lived for over a half a century, actually over 60 years, with several dozen pounds of steel around his legs. His sister once told Father Bob Barron, "If you want to understand my brother, you have to understand he's constantly in pain." But you never knew that because of that radical conversion. He really had conformed his life to the life of the Lord and to the cross. And that's why he bore the pain with the equanimity he did. And that's why I like to think of his death through the prism of the gospel stories of the Transfiguration, where all that is broken in us, where we learn that all that is broken in us will be made whole in the kingdom. And we see the promise of that in the transfigured Christ. And that's the first image from the Bible that occurred to me in the first few minutes after I learned of his death.
There's another image that the cardinal actually left many of us with, and there was a lot of speculation about where this particular image came from. But he spoke about the fact that he would die in his bed, but those after him, a priest after him, would die a martyr's death. Can you tell us what he was speaking about when he used those terms?
Well, what he, to get exactly specific here, because this often isn't said in its complete form, the cardinal, in addressing a group of Chicago priests, in an offhand, informal kind of way, talking about really the difficulties of being a Catholic in America at this moment in cultural and political history, the challenges, said, "I will die in bed, my successor will die in prison. His successor will be a martyr in the public square, and his successor will help pick up the shards of a fractured society and rebuild civilization as the church has done so many times in the past." I think that was an attempt to get the priest's attention, to alert them to the kinds of challenges that we're going to face, for example, in the wake of what seems very likely to be a disastrous Supreme Court decision on the nature of marriage in a few months. And he was trying to get their attention. I mean, Francis George, in the almost 30 years I knew him, was not a man of an apocalyptic cast of mind. But he was a realist, and he could see where things were going. And he knew that we were possibly heading for a season of persecution in the church, and he wanted the church to be prepared for that. And I think it's entirely the case that it was his leadership of the Bishops' Conference as its president from 2007 to 2010 that allowed the bishops to then, in a united way, challenge the Obama administration and the HHS mandate fight under Cardinal Timothy Dolan, Cardinal George's successor as president of the conference. No George, no Dolan. No challenge of the sort that was mounted to the administration's attempt to turn Catholic institutions into mere delivery systems for government programs. That's what he was talking about with that very striking formulation.
Well, Cardinal George certainly leaves a very big legacy. This is Jeanette DiMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking with Mr. George Weigel about Cardinal George's legacy, and I'm going to bring on Rocco Palmo to talk about the legacy which Cardinal George once said his legacy was his people, and he spoke that to the people of Chicago, and now those people in Chicago are bidding him a farewell. Now, Rocco, I wanted you to give us some expectation of what this week is like in Chicago.
Well, Jen, first off, thanks for having me. The funeral of a cardinal is always obviously a major event, you know, especially because the cardinals have tended to lead the largest dioceses in the country. So in a place like Chicago, though, there's always a little bit of local flavor. And in Chicago, you have to remember that there are really two preeminent leaders in the city for no matter what people's faith is. There's the mayor and there's the archbishop, the cardinal. And even though Cardinal George was the first holder of the archbishop's chair to retire from the office, all his predecessors died, the city has turned out what's kind of really a state funeral, if you will. As we're speaking, it's Tuesday afternoon. The rite of reception of the body just ended in Holy Name Cathedral. There's going to be two full days of viewing, culminating with an all-night vigil. The cathedral will be open to the public all Wednesday night into Thursday morning, and then the funeral mass of Thursday at noon. And as George was saying, you know, Cardinal George has been the titan, if you will, of the American bishops in our generation, much as his predecessor, Cardinal Bernardino, was for a prior generation. And so I think we're in for the largest funeral of an American cardinal the most intense send-off a Cardinal's had in this country since Cardinal O'Connor of New York died in 2000, because his impact both on the bishops and on the life of the wider church and on the life of the city of Chicago has been that huge. The bishops owe a tremendous debt to Cardinal George. They know that for all his leadership. Arguably, in the wake of the challenges the public square bishops have had, I mean, he's arguably the man who saved the bishops' conference from a massive rupture, especially in the wake of the election in 2008.
George, as we conclude, I'd like to turn back to you. You said that the cardinal called us all to an all-in Catholicism. Can you describe that as our concluding remarks?
At his first press conference in Chicago in 1997, then Archbishop George, when asked about the usual liberal conservative nonsense, said the Catholic Church is not about left and right. It's about true and false, good and evil, what's noble and what isn't noble. And that's the way he conducted his episcopate for the next 17 years. And that means being a church that is both pro-life and pro the empowerment of the poor. It means a church of great intellectual sophistication and deep regard for popular piety. It means a church that forms citizens who bring the Catholic vision of the human person and human community and human goods into the public arena. It means all of that. It's not a pick and choose kind of thing. And he embodied that in his own person. And if we're going to learn from his example, we will do that all-in Catholic thing ourselves, as will his brother bishops, including his successor.
Very good. Thank you so much, gentlemen, for being with us. I appreciate your time and all of your wisdom on Cardinal George and his legacy.
Thanks, Jen. God bless.
Thank you.
When we return, Anne Carey joins us with a summary of the Vatican Report on the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More in a moment.
I'm Brian Patrick, and here at EWTN News Nightly, we're very much aware our world is changing rapidly. The news can be so troubling, but it helps to get it in the context of Catholic teaching. That's why I encourage you to watch EWTN News Nightly and to subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register. Always faithful, in-depth coverage of crucial issues like religious freedom, the sanctity of all human life, traditional marriage, and Pope Francis, his travels, his powerful homilies, and great features like one of my favorites on St. Joseph, Provider and Protector. Subscribe to the print edition of the National Catholic Register and watch EWTN News Nightly, the perfect combination for faithful Catholics who want the news, who want the truth.
For a free 3-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-421-3230 for your 3 free issues.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Jeanette DeMello, I'm Tom Price. Our next guest, Anne Carey, has written extensively about Catholic women religious for many years, with articles in the Register, Our Sunday Visitor, and Catholic World Report. Anne is the author of the book Sisters in Crisis, available from Ignatius Press, where she covers at length the controversy surrounding the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and the group's clashes with the Vatican. Recently, the Vatican issued their final report on the LCWR, and Jeanette talks with Anne about the findings.
Anne, last week the Vatican made an announcement about something we've been waiting for about 6 years, really. Vatican officials and the officers of the Leadership Conference for Women Religious, they met in Rome. That's the LCWR. They met in Rome April 16th, and a final report on the doctrinal assessment was released. What did that report say?
The report said that the LCWR and the bishop delegates that the Vatican had appointed to speak with the LCWR about the reform, that they had come together with an agreement. That agreement was presented to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, which accepted that agreement. And it actually had several parts. One was that the LCWR statutes would be revised to emphasize the fact that the role of the conference was centered on Jesus Christ and faithful to the teachings of the church in helping the various sisters in this country. Another was that conference publications and programs would have oversight by competent theologians who would guard against doctrinal errors, as had been detailed in the past by the leadership or by the CDF's assessment of the conference. Also, that went for not only speakers and programs, but publications. Both were to be have very adequate oversight. And also that the award given to, like, given each year, their outstanding leadership award, that there would be some vetting of the person who would be to receive it. Now, all this reflected what the CDF had found in its assessment of some past doctrinal problems in the LCWR. And this was all aimed to correct those problems.
Well, this seems like some great news, really. I mean, and some very expected news, in fact. You see, your recent news analysis for the Register published last week, its headline was, LCWR agrees to abide by Vatican's corrections. Now, you contrast that with a news article that you wrote last year, just about this time, and it said, Cardinal Mueller, LCWR stands in open provocation of the Holy See. So there's almost seems to be a complete turnabout. Is that true? How did this happen?
It certainly seems like a turnabout because the assessment started back in 2009, and it was not well received at that time, the doctrinal assessment. Mm-hmm. It was not well received by LCWR. And then in 2012, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith said, we have taken that assessment and we have written a mandate, and here are the various things that need to be reformed in LCWR. That, again, was not well received. Mm-hmm. And while there was not much publicity about what actually went on in the meetings with the bishop delegates and the LCWR, all indications were that it was a very stormy situation. The leadership conference would not accept the reforms that were being proposed or really imposed by the Vatican. And really, even through their assembly last August, it seemed as though there were a lot of pushback. I think, now my opinion of what's mm-hmm. happened, and I've seen this voiced elsewhere, is that, first of all, I think the sisters somehow thought that Pope Francis might intervene and stop mm-hmm. this the reform. And several times they did ask for an audience with him. That audience was never granted. So I think, number one, the sisters may have come to the conclusion, well, the Pope isn't going to intervene. Mm-hmm. Then number two, Sister Sharon Holland was elected president at the August Assembly last year. She had worked at the Vatican for over 20 years. She's a very fine canon lawyer. She was elected president of LCWR. I think part of the motivation was that they hoped that the LCWR hoped that her connections with the Vatican would help them in the discussions. But I think it probably cut both ways. Mm-hmm. Sister Sharon is a good canon lawyer. And I think she was probably able to prevail upon the LCWR to understand that the Vatican had the authority to impose these reforms on a canonical entity, such mm-hmm. as the LCWR. And I think that the sisters finally came to the realization that if they wanted to remain a canonical entity, they would need to accept the reforms.
Sure. Let's say, what was the other option? I mean, I don't know if our listeners would know. What would the other option be for them?
Well, in fact, some sisters even spoke of it openly. The other option would be that the canonical status as a Vatican-approved Superior's Conference would be withdrawn. And so they would no longer have that cachet of being a Vatican-approved Superior's Conference. They could have continued along as a secular organization of sisters who lead orders, but certainly I think a lot of the membership probably would have pulled out if that were the case. So I think that was the alternative, and they decided that was not a very palatable alternative, and so they needed to accept this reform and move on.
This is Jeanette DeMello on Register Radio, and I'm speaking to Ann Carey, who writes for the Register on issues related to women religious and also on very positive things related to women religious. Right now she's covering for us the LCWR and the final report issued by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, Anne, you have written for the Register in the past about how many of the sisters who belong to orders who are involved in the LCWR had not been happy with how things were going. Have you been able to be in touch with any of those sisters now? What are their reactions?
Well, all of the sisters that I've spoken with since this report came out who are LCWR, whose superiors belong to LCWR, are very, very pleased.
Okay.
They feel that that it's very important for sisters to be in union with the church. And so they're very, very pleased with the outcome. Now, a couple of them have mentioned to me they don't know if it's going to improve the situation within their orders, mm-hmm. But they still think it's a very, very positive move.
And how might we see change? Like, where can we look to actually measure up against this mandate and this final report that says, yes, we're going to abide? How do we then kind of look to see the progress?
Well, I think we have to just, it's kind of one of these wait-and-see situations. I think we certainly can look at the speakers for the upcoming LCWR assembly, which would be this August. And both of those speakers, one of them is Sister Janet Mock, who is a former executive director of LCWR, and mm-hmm. the other is a priest from the Catholic Theological Union, whose name escapes me at the moment. Just right on the surface of it, to me, seeing who those speakers are is an improvement right there over last year when Ilia DeLeo spoke about the new cosmology and Barbara Marx Hubbard spoke the year before. So right there, I think it looks like an improvement to me. You can also kind of watch for the publications that might be coming out. They have a quarterly occasional papers that have been criticized for doctrinal errors. That we can see what the content of that looks like. I do know that the Systems Thinking Handbook, which the mandate said should be withdrawn until it was revised, it's no longer available on the website. So I think there are a few small steps that one can already perceive, but it will be interesting to watch in the future to see. But I would say basically to look at the publications, public statements from the LCWR, and look and see who the speakers are at their programs and training sessions.
Well, I'm sure you'll continue to watch that for us. Now, can you make another connection for our audience here? In December of last year, so December 2014, there was another conclusion to another investigation, or we say in the church, an apostolic visitation, of women religious in the U.S. How do these two reports relate, or do they?
Well, they only relate somewhat. The other was, as you say, an apostolic visitation of all the women's orders in the United States to look at the quality of life of the sisters in those orders and to look at some of the financial issues. Most people know that there's a very aging population of Catholic sisters in this country. That assessment was done by the Institutes of Consecrated Life and Societies of Apostolic Life. And they were also concerned about the financial situation. Can the orders take care of their elderly? What's happening to the property of the different orders as their finances are running low, that sort of thing. So that was an entirely different situation. However, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith wanted to wait until that report and that final wrap-up of the visitation was over before it started its reform of the leadership conference. That's really the only connection there.
Well, Anne, it's always good to have you talking about these sometimes serious issues related to the women religious. The LCWR has, caught the attention of church leaders and their need to have these corrections. But this is the year of consecrated life, and there's a lot of beauty in the consecrated life. Can we end on a very positive note? Where do you see some of the beauty of this year of consecrated life flowering?
Well, I see it flowering with the many of the orders. First of all, are not affiliated with the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. But also some of those that are really doing wonderful work. And I think some of them are not very supportive of how the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the leaders of that group, have been portraying themselves and religious life in this country. And I have been hearing that there's been some pushback from some of the members about how things have been handled by the leadership. Mm-hmm. So I would say look at the wonderful work that individual sisters and the witness of the individual sisters. Most of us who know sisters, we admire them very much.
That's right.
And I think it's unfortunate that some of the leadership conference, the antics of the leadership conference, have painted a lot of sisters in a bad light. And I think we need to get past that and realize that the majority of sisters are faithful to the church, and they're very, very strongly supportive of the hierarchy and wanting to carry out their ministries for the sake of the church in the very best way they can. And we owe much to these sisters.
We owe them a debt of gratitude. We should thank our sisters and religious, our consecrated people. And we should thank you, Anne. Thank you for being on this show.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Don't forget you can listen to our show again by going to ncregister.com. Look for the microphone to listen or download the show. Thanks for joining us this time on Register Radio. For our producer, Elena Rodriguez, Jeanette, and all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
So many people have told us that the National Catholic Register is one of the few sources of information they trust. They've also said they wish they had known about the Register sooner.
The misinformation in society has led us all to make mistakes in life, mistakes that could have been prevented with a better perspective. At the intersection of faith and culture, the catechetical nature of the Register provides the information that Catholics need, especially if, like me, they were not well catechized or converts to the faith that didn't have the necessary resources to begin with.
Please donate to the Register now. Your donation helps us reach out and provide crucial, faithful content to more Catholics, getting their news from otherwise unreliable sources. To donate, go to ncregister.com and click the Donate tab, or mail your donation to the National Catholic Register, P.O. Box 100699, Irondale, Alabama, 35210. Donate today and change "I wish I had known" to "I know the truth."